and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special recording with me, Landon, and for the very first time, one-on-one that is, had to be a better way to phrase that, is my buddy, Hunter freaking East. Hunter, how are we doing tonight?
I am doing pretty damn good, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Thank you for asking. And we are recording this on July 19th, 2017, the year of our Lord, Macho Man Randy Savage.
Ho!
And the reason I mention that is tomorrow is your birthday, so let me go ahead and wish you, my friend, a happy birthday.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Very excited to celebrate one more year around the sun.
Yes, drinks to that. And for your birthday, I decided to get you a Game of Thrones podcast that we're going to host. So, I mean, I really hope you don't have another one because I didn't hang on to the receipt. You cannot return it to the store.
So. That's okay with me. I'm happy to accept that gift, good sir.
Good deal. We are thinking of calling this Game of Thrones Talk or Got Talk. I kind of like that one. Another one that I'm kicking around is It's Always Sunny in Westeros.
Ooh, I like that one.
Though there is a YouTube like mashup of It's Always Sunny and Game of Thrones, so maybe we don't want to do that one. But if you have a suggestion, let us know. I'm at twitter.com/Landoz, L-A-N-D-O-Z. Hunter, where can the lovely folks find you on Twitter?
I am at The Tall Effect. That's Effect with E. At The Tall Effect, and then, of course, I'm on Facebook, because who isn't at this point?
Exactly. It's 2017. Everybody's on Facebook. My unborn children are on Facebook. That's I don't even know how that works, but, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, he works in mysterious ways.
Such weird ways. God.
But, yes, we are here tonight to talk about Game of Thrones. More specifically, Season 7 did just debut this past Sunday. A big, big to-do on the internet and in my household. I'm sure, Hunter, you were the same way.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I was ready to go watch the last couple of episodes before that one of season 6, so that way I could be, I knew where everyone was, I knew what the story was about to go into, and I knew what I wanted to see.
See, that's nice. Kind of gave yourself a refresher course. You said you kind of knew what you wanted to see. What did you want to see coming into this season? Granted, we've only seen one episode, but I'm curious, what are you looking for in this season upcoming?
Well, at least in the season upcoming, I guess I'll do both, the episode and then the season. For me, the episode I figured was just going to be a lot of setup. You know, we got to see where everybody is on the path or what path everybody's on. So that way we can figure out, you know, who's going to Westeros, who's attacking from what area, who's defending. Because at this point, we've got a lot of things that are coming to fruition. Finally, winter's come. We've got the wall that sounds like it's just in really bad shape. It sounds like it's not going to be a good time for anybody at the wall, which I've said for the last half season. I thought whenever they get to that point, because Hard Home was amazing, one of my favorite episodes, I was like, whenever that gets to the wall ain't nothing. I don't care what magic incantation they've got on this thing. It's not going to work. Something's going to be done. So in the episode, I wanted to see some good setup, but I have to say that the opening scene took me very much so by surprise. Cold open.
Yeah.
And we go straight into somehow Waldorf Frey with his throat intact talking to his entire family. And then I was like, everybody just all nodded like, yeah, this is about to go down.
Yeah.
Like, good.
You mentioned the cold open. Let's go ahead and get right into this to episode one. This makes the fifth season to open with a cold open in Game of Thrones. The only seasons prior to not do that is seasons 2 and 6. And, yeah, that was one of those moments that just completely, like, when you realized what was going on, it was like a, okay. See, Game of Thrones is one of those shows that it often, like, hits you in the feels very hard. But it's generally in a, oh my god, I can't believe that negative type way when they hit you in the feels.
Yeah.
This was one of those rare opportunities where it was a, oh yeah, type of feels.
Oh, it was great because as, you know, just to kind of set up a little bit of history of what my experience is with Game of Thrones, I have not read the books. I'm not going to read the books. They're just not really on par with what I want to do with that story. However, the show has been phenomenal. I've loved it, but I didn't start watching until about season 3. I watched the previous 2 seasons, you know, kind of binged them, and then season 3 started and I was in there. So when the Red Wedding came around, this was a dagger to the heart and many other places on these poor souls' bodies because those were the characters I loved. The Starks are genuinely the family that, you know, most people, I would say, are originally pulling for, and to just have 3 of them gutted right there.
In very visceral ways, too.
Oh, just brutal. So to me, it felt like with this cold open, it wasn't enough that they showed you that Waldorf Frey ate his children. It wasn't enough that he had a quiet, death, not in battle, not in war, but Arya just standing over him, telling him what she's going to do before she does it, and then slitting his throat. That's not enough to avenge the Red Wedding. And by God, they were right, because when they opened with this, I was like, yeah, don't you forget. And then what she say? You tell everybody the North remembers. Mm-hmm. I was like, you damn right, you tell them, you tell them good.
And I love how she said, it's like, you left one Stark alive, and that was one too many. But yeah. I do think it's interesting, because while she was Frey, she said when she invited all the, quote, every Frey who means a damn thing to this feast and poisons and kills them all. But in that quote, she doesn't say all of the Freys.
That is true.
In the back of my mind, I'm worried, because I kind of know the way, at least the show Game of Thrones works. This type of stuff is going to eventually get to you. And one of our characters we'll be talking about later, Sansa, implores Jon to be smarter than previous characters. Otherwise, he's going to end up dead like these previous characters.
Yes,
and
you're absolutely right.
I'm really afraid that Arya is like, there's going to be one rogue Frey that's going to get this hair up his or her ass and hunt down Arya.
That could happen. I feel like Arya at this point is pretty untouchable. And I say that with some skepticism, because it is Game of Thrones. But at this point, she's gone so far. I have to start thinking, because since the show is wrapping up, since the books are wrapping up, there is a finish line that we can see. And there was always, which is really nice, because some shows don't know when to walk away, or books even.
Very true.
But it's nice to have that finish line. You know things are going to be wrapping up. And so you're going to think to yourself, all right, if Arya dies soon, what would her arc really mean to the great? Why was she kept alive so long? You know, you start to... That's the detriment of knowing the finish line is coming. You're like, okay, they're not just going to kill her next episode, like, or at least that's not what I'm seeing at all. She's got a purpose in the end game of this series somehow.
Yeah, one would definitely.
So I feel like I don't think she's going anywhere. But you're right, because if she's warning people, how poetic, which we've seen more than a couple times on Game of Thrones.
Seriously,
the person that gets gutted, it said something a few seasons ago, and it was like, man, why you got to say that? Because now you know you're gonna get gutted by the last Frey or something like that. Like,
forget even seasons later, Littlefinger straight up told Ned Stark, "You shouldn't really trust me." And then episodes later, with a dagger to the throat, what does he say? "I told you shouldn't trust me."
Told you not to do it, man. I warned you.
This is Game of Thrones. You play to win or you die.
Yeah, that's what I've learned. And that's why last season, that scene with Ian McShane and his hippie group that's trying to spread love around Westeros and build houses, you know, that kind of that's ignorance in that world. It's a level of ignorance that Ned Stark proved you couldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And not that Ned was ignorant, but he believed that the greater good of a person would always prevail. And in this world, that is absolutely, time and again, not what happens to a majority of these characters. You can't do that. So even when I saw them, the first thing you thought was, well, they're all dead. There's no way.
Yep.
And then the Lords of Light dudes come in. The saving grace, I thought, was like, oh, the Hound will be there, and he'll at least take a few down with him. Like, it'll be something. Well, that doesn't happen. And then I loved him killing the guys that he caught up to, as well as the guys that he had to hang in season 6. But I digress. Sorry.
Absolutely. And depending on how well / people listen to this podcast, maybe we can go back and talk about the earlier seasons at some point.
Exactly. I'd be more than happy to rewatch some seasons.
Exactly.
Just to get a feel for it. I mean, because let's be honest, we don't have that many episodes left of this, so we need to soak it in.
Which is kind of a bummer. There are 12 episodes as of this recording left of Game of Thrones. And Hunter and I were talking before we recorded, doing a little, you know, inside baseball. What show is gonna follow Game of Thrones? I fear for that poor bastard of a show.
That's a podcast in and of itself right there, because you really need to come up with some specific answers. You can't just be like, oh, well, you know, what's the show that's coming back, that the gay guy Jack and Will and Grace. You can't be like, well, Will and Grace is coming back. Like, no, that ain't going to cut it, dog.
No.
That's not on the same level.
It's like, I know Curb Your Enthusiasm is really popular, but I mean, it ain't Game of Thrones.
Enough.
Yeah.
Not enough.
Yeah. Larry David has yet to show one single damn dragon. So, like, like, call me HBO when Larry David fights dragons.
That's what I want to see in that show. I want to see all that. In every show, because Game of Thrones has just got me so hooked on this unexpected nature. Like, it's, I keep, you know, without I don't ever tell new people that watch the show or that haven't watched it this, but it's essentially like if at Walking Dead they got rid of Rick at least by season two.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what in the hell are we going to do now?
Yeah, like,
I don't know what's the next step?
The main character just lost his head. Oh, by the way, spoilers. There are going to be spoilers for Game of Thrones in this podcast.
Yeah. What are you doing?
I really hope you figured it out by this point. But next thing we see is going to be the White Walkers army marching, and the big reveal in this scene is we see not one, not two, but three. Three giants.
Three. Hunter, three zombie giants.
Oh, Hunter's Twitter, the tall effect is not for laughs. He is a big man. So
6 foot four. Yeah. So, yes, it is. Every time I see a giant, when I was watching Battle of the Bastards, I was like, Biggie, get in there. Get it. Be the battering ram, baby. I was all about it, and he went down. So that helped me watch Jon Snow beat Ramsay to a pulp in his own home. That was great because I didn't want him taking down Biggie. I love my boys, the Giants, man. They're great.
Well, they are back and with a vengeance, I'm willing to bet.
So excited. I can't wait to see one of those go ham on something.
We've seen what the Giants can do in battle, so it's going to be very interesting to see what zombie Giants can do in battle because that seems even worse for Westeros. And
it's gonna be bad.
It's gonna be bad. Winter is here, and winter has a bite.
Yes, big old giant bite.
You talk about the wall and the magic it has. It now might have a little bit more magic because Bran and Mira show up after it's revealed that the vision of the White Walker was Bran doing his three-eyed raven stuff. So the Night's Watch brings them in. You have to ask yourself, does the magic that comes with the three-eyed raven, does that also protect the wall? Because you made mention, you don't know if the enchantment they have now is going to hold the army coming in, so they're going to need all the help they can get.
Yeah, I mean, I, again, didn't read the books and don't have any of this, but from once the books were done, I did the thing that I never do with TV shows or series that I haven't completed yet, which is Google a little bit. And the only thing I Googled was, like, you know, a little info about the White Walkers. I just was so curious. We, you know, for a long time, you see very, very little of them. And I wanted to know kind of more of the lore because there's a lot. These books are not tiny. They're gigantic tomes. Mm-hmm. So there's probably a lot of detail in there about some things that I'd actually be interested in, but not enough to read the whole thing. So
zero pictures, by the way. Not a single drawing.
Not a single one. Not a single boob we get. And that's why that's number one right there, why the show can't, you don't even tell the books are better. I bet it's not, because you don't actually get to see the ladies. You don't get to see the killing. You don't get to see none of that.
The man
so
has a point.
I disagree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I disagree. But the magic with the wall. So here's what I have gathered from that. The reason that the White Walkers cannot go past the wall is because there has been some type of magic that was done when it was built. The humans didn't just build the wall. There's something like the first men of the forest or the first men of something. They actually helped the humans build that wall, and they used magic to do so. And this somehow keeps these creatures, like the White Walkers and the dead, from ever passing. Now, what I've understood is this, and I don't quote me here.
Again, we have not read the book. Neither one of us.
I'm not.
We're talking strictly television, yo.
I'm letting it rot my brain. So when you check it out in the books, apparently, when Bran is back there and he has that vision of the Night King and the Night King grabs him, that was, you remember that then after that happened, the Night King and the White Walkers and everybody were able to invade
through that
tree.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in the same fashion, now that that curse has been lifted and he has touched Bran, if Bran passes through the wall, the White Walkers will now be able to go through the wall anytime. There's no magic left.
Ooh.
That is the kind of Deus Machina that brings in their, you know,
wow,
their ability to get past that insurmountable seemingly wall.
I hadn't even thought of that. Wow.
Yes. So that's what I've been told. Now, whether that's bullshit, I don't know, but that's what I've heard on the old interwebs.
I mean, that would make sense. Like you made reference to in past seasons, we've seen after Bran was touched in his vision, Night King and company come right through that tree when previously the magic protected it. So I hadn't even thought, by bringing in Bran and Mira, the Night's Watch might have just opened themselves up to a unstoppable White Walker invasion.
I think they have. I think they have, and I think that the wall is going to be the first casualty, and not just, you know, the structure or anything like that, but all of the men in all of the protected castles, and they keep mentioning one, and we'll get to that, you know, down the line of the story, but they keep mentioning one oft that's on the side. They mention it a couple times, and I think it's different characters. One is Sam, and one is another one.
The Hound.
Talking about, yes, the Hound, that's it.
In his vision, and, yeah.
In the vision, he talks about, you know, this place that thousands of the White Walkers would be crossing and all this stuff. And I think that that has something to do. There's going to be some significance. And it looks like, at least from what I can gather so far, Tormund is ready to go. Tormund is truly crazy because he's seen all that stuff and saw his people killed and raised up. And he's still like, point me in the direction so I can kill a lot of them. Like, he just wants war.
He volunteered the wildlings for this job. You're exactly right. He has seen face to face what these White Walkers can do, so he wants to go meet the fight and stop them. And I do agree with you that castle at the edge of the sea, I do think that's going to play a big part in this season. Our first mention of that castle does come in our next scene. Let's go ahead and jump to Winterfell when we have our first scene of Jon Snow, King of the North.
Woo!
Yeah.
What a powerful scene. And Lady Mormont still throwing shade at anybody that steps to her.
Lady Mormont. She was so great in that scene. and I loved, like, I love that this came from Jon saying he wants to arm not only the men, but the women and the children, and then the old guard was kind of like, harumph, harumph, harumph.
My daughter this and my wife that, so I don't know about, you know.
It's like, homeboy, Winter is here. Winter don't care about, doesn't care if it's your wife or your daughter. Like pick up
welcome
a spear.
To equality, baby. You're all going to die in the eyes of the dead.
Yeah. Death does not see gender.
Death does not care about your face.
Nope.
So, yeah, that is good. I like this scene because it further cemented that even though Jon is now king, because he's had this responsibility before, he was the Night's Watch, the commander of the Night's Watch, and it didn't go well for him at all.
He got killed.
Not because he was a bad leader, not because he was unwise in his choices as commander. He was unwise with who he trusted, and that is what got him killed. Not that he was a bad leader. He did things that he felt was right. He explained them, and he, you know, left it out in front of everybody. Everybody, you know, killed him for it. So he knows now, hopefully, that he's got to watch who he trusts. He has to be careful because he's been in a position of power now, and he's the only character outside of, whatever the eye patch dude is. I cannot remember his name, the guy from the Lord of Light. Outside of him, he's the only character that we've seen Jon Snow brought back to life in this series. So he's one of the only characters that has actually escaped death. And that's a big thing. So he has to learn from that because now he sent the Red Priestess away. That little, you know, magic one-up mushroom has left the coop. That's not here anymore.
Melisandre ain't walking through those doors. Or who knows? She might. Yeah. We still have 12 episodes. Quick sidebar. Part of the reason I like Game of Thrones is I can't pronounce half the name of the cast or remember who they are. So this podcast is going to be an exercise in that. Just FYI. So
yeah, you've got Google, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
You're
probably screaming at your iPod or whatever you listen to your podcast on your phone. You're Zoom to people. Probably not a Zoom. You're probably screaming at it right now, the name of Eye Patch Guy. But
it's Lord Baccarat, you jackasses. I can hear him now. It's okay, people. Don't worry. We can't hear you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But thank you for listening, regardless. But yes. It is interesting you made reference to John's previous leader experience and, I guess, trusting the wrong people. He has his family to fall back on, but in this meeting, Sansa, we're from Tennessee. Some of these names are going to get a little twangy sometimes.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. we're just having fun. Sansa, like, very publicly challenges him because it comes down to Jon wants to give back some castles to families that fought against him in the Battle of the Bastards and sided with Ramsay Bolton.
Yes.
Where the dissenters were saying, no, you should give it to the families that were loyal to you. Don't reward treason. And Sansa agrees with him, and Jon says, well, you know what? I'm running the show. What I say goes, suck it.
Well, and he did the smart thing. He, defaulted back to your moral center that I believe that is Game of Thrones, which is Ned.
Yep.
Ned, and even in the beginning when Ned was thought to be a you know, an adulterer, he was still noble. He was still that guy. Turns out he wasn't an adulterer, and he was that noble, which also makes his death hang a little bit heavier. But he goes back to his father's words. If you're gonna decide the execution, you're gonna swing the sword. Mm-hmm. And so he falls back to that to A, remind people of why he's the leader they're choosing, and B, remind his sister, hey, you weren't out there to watch father do this, but I was, and I know that you have, as she later reveals, learned things from Cersei, which is, you know, a good thing. We've all been waiting for Sansa to do something for about 6 seasons now, so it's nice to somehow see how she grew up and didn't get killed, but all these characters that actually stepped forward and did something didn't make it past a couple seasons. So, my opinion, I like that she stood up and said something, but also, Jon's got to remember that, again, the people closest to him were the ones that killed him the first time. So he's got to be careful, because he knows that Littlefinger, he's got to know that Littlefinger's slimy. Sansa knows it, and her line to him about, I'll imagine something clever, you don't have to have the last word. Damn, Sansa.
That was actually something we're going to be doing on this podcast, a line of the show. When she drops that on him, I'm like, damn, can we just roll That's credits it. Right there? Like, just shut it down. That was great.
Welcome to meme world, Sansa. You're going to be here for a long time.
Mic drop.
That was good.
Let's go ahead and jump to that scene you were referencing, because it is interesting, because Jon reveals a side of Sansa's father that she didn't know existed. I mean, like she knew he did the down and dirty and when he was out there being a warrior, but, like, she never saw this side of him. Like, what was the line that had you in it. And Sansa says, father never said that to me. Yeah, well, I mean, there was a side of the coin you didn't see with Ned.
Yeah, that was his big message to her, and he's trying to remind her, like, look, I don't mind if you have a differing opinion, but mm-hmm. doing it in front of everybody is not going to help us, and we need everybody on a united front. Like, Sansa's still not seeing the dead. Like, she doesn't fully understand what's coming.
She's worried about Cersei.
Yeah, she's worried about the wrong foe at this point, but it is nice because, you know, Littlefinger is going to have – I'm very interested to see where he goes this season. I mean, he is obviously this kind of viper in the, you know, in the hen house. It's not good that he is so close to so many characters that I like. I get nervous. I don't get nervous when Varys gets close to characters that I like, but I do get nervous whenever Littlefinger does. It's just I can't stand having him so close to John and, you know, potentially any other Starks that come home.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of any other potential Starks that are coming home, this episode once again continues the trope of a Stark sibling just missing
just so
a
close.
Brother or sister. Like Bran, hey, I'm home, brother. Oh, he's gone. Yeah, you missed him like 6 weeks ago. So.
They just don't want it to happen. And that is, again, why the scene between John and Sansa originally is just not... It's not hokey. It's like you finally get to see two of these siblings connect and be okay, not under terrible circumstances.
Exactly,
you know, Theon couldn't say that with his sister. The first time that we get introduced to his sister, first time she sees him in the series for us, he's a dog. I mean, he's literally a pet of some bastard. So literally, and. So it's a nice thing to have, but now it's very interesting to see what is going to happen with their dynamic. Is she still going to be this nagging force? But she's not wrong. The thing that's great about Sansa is now she has changed into a character that doesn't piss me off at every turn. She's actually talking some sense. You have to be smarter than father. Mm-hmm. It was sort of, in my opinion, her rebuttal to him going, father said this, and she's like, you need to be better than that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You've got to remember that he's dead. And Cersei and all these other people, they don't care about nobility or what you're doing. They want to kill you, so be smarter than him. So that was good. I liked that too. It was good. Sometimes these arguments feel manufactured, and they're not really. It's like, you're just trying to create drama. These are legit conversations that these two need to have. So it's believable.
Yeah, and I'll echo what you said about Sansa. It's like, just the growth this character has gone from. We're introduced to, like, some meek, like, very stuck-up Pris child to this, like, I know another property has already claimed this term, a Wonder Woman in Sansa. I mean, it's like she's calling Jon on it.
Hold off.
She's 100% right. It's like you can hold Father and Rob in these high regards, but you have to be better than them because, yeah, you hold them in high regards, but they're dead.
Like, you made it. You've made it so far.
Yeah.
And I think she's finally grasping, and it was so good. Like, because I just didn't care for Sansa. I didn't like her character. She annoyed me. And then when she got to see some of the horrors, it was like she understood what it was. This world is not what I thought. I don't want what I want. And now I have to figure out. And so for a long time, she just flounders. She goes from owner to owner, basically. And then it's nice to finally see her grow a backbone. And once she basically said, you know, no one can protect anyone, it was finally this, you see how Game of Thrones works now. I'm so glad you can see it, because we've been watching the for six seasons.
Well, and you made reference to her seeing the atrocities up close. A lot of what she saw was somebody she referenced later in the episode, and Jon straight up said, when she talked about Cersei, it almost sounds like you admire her. And I do think there is a small part of Sansa that does admire Cersei and the way that she gets stuff done.
Well, I think there's a way to look at Sansa right now that basically says, if I got what I wanted and I didn't give a shit about anybody, I'd be Cersei. Mm-hmm. Like, if she married Joffrey and she just went with everything and just decided, I'm going to be this person with him now, I'm going to do everything that he wants to do, she'd become Cersei. She'd
2.0.
Be the queen. Mm-hmm. Yep. And she'd be evil and just ruthless. And so she can admire the idea of that, but she hates the person because, obviously, you know, all the death that the Lannisters
has
brought on
their
family.
Yeah.
She's Cersei. She's the biggest, you know, see you next Tuesday I've ever seen in a show. I can't wait for her to get hers, but... It's something that I thought was good that she brought up. Yeah, I admire. And do you think me as Joffrey? And she says, you're the furthest thing from Joffrey. So I like that, too. She was convincing in her argument, and she was also making sure that, just like Ramsay, she did that with Ramsay. You don't know him. I know him. Don't do what he wants you to do. I know that sounds obvious, but he's the one that lays the traps. You don't lay traps for him. So she has been right. Now, my only question is how far is Littlefinger going to let her just kind of wave him off before he has a reaction? Like, put it this way, let's say another Stark, any Stark, shows up to Winterfell and Littlefinger can't figure out how to get back into the good graces of people that he thinks will serve him better to get to the Iron Throne, aka Cersei. What would he happen to have to offer her as a gift? Three Starks. That's the trump card that he can have. He can alert the wrong people, not even Cersei, just the wrong people of where these people are and how he's got an in. That can end very poorly for them. So I got to keep an eye on that little bastard. I don't want him getting out of sight. I don't like him when we're in Winterfell, and I don't see him.
Well, you made the analogy. He's a viper in the hen house, and I think that's spot on. This is a character that plays the long game. He plays a longer long game than people who are playing the long game play. But on the flip side, you're curious how far Littlefinger's going to let this go. I'm more curious how far this newly empowered Sansa is going to let Littlefinger go. Because like you said, she knows he's a snake in the grass. She knows he's a douche. Like, she straight up says, I know what he wants. And it's kind of gross, but...
Kind of had a thing for my mom. It's weird. You went through my sister, too.
Exactly. It's like,
or her
like,
sister.
Like, there's a whole sort of complex that has a fun Greek name. That's so jacked up. But it's like, I'm definitely interested to see where this storyline goes. And I'm willing to bet this is not the last time that Jon and Sansa are going to butt heads this season. And I'm kind of afraid, like... You have to have a completely united front. Even the smallest frayed thread can unravel the biggest thing.
It can, and they've just got to be careful with, again, who they trust. I think that's the biggest thing, is the houses they've got there that are with them seem to be very trustworthy. They answer the call, and if they didn't, Lady Mormont's letting you know what up.
Bear Isle represent!
Don't let it go. I'll tell you what, Lady Mormont is the North. I'm going to start calling her the North because she don't forget. She remembers everything.
John might have the title of King of the North, but she really runs the North.
She is the North, baby. She don't forget nothing, and she's only like 12.
Seriously.
She's so... but anyways, yeah. I will be curious to see what kind of conflict they have, and what do you think? Maybe one of those conflicts is Littlefinger. Maybe John's just like, I don't like him around, or I don't want him, but... You know, he saved their ass. He's the reason they're alive, you know?
Sansa straight up says that. We need him. We need the Veil. If the Veil didn't show up, Ramsay would have won that day. She straight up admits that to Lady Brienne.
She knows. Brienne. And And that's good. Yeah, whichever one.
Again, sorry. Yeah. I'm doing my best here. Yeah.
Do what we can.
Broadcast professional.
That's a good time. Can we also just, speaking of, because there's a very short scene, but it's worth every second, to see Tormund again give the eyebrow to the lovely Brienne.
She's whipping Pad's ass, and Pad's like, yeah, she's just beating me down. Tormund's like, oh, you're a lucky guy.
You're a lucky man. That's so good. I love this this awkward, love tension thing that they've got going between them, because Brienne's really not giving him the time of day, but she does respect that he can hold his own. He's no, he's no slouch. So yeah, they would have the tallest... Yeah. Craziest kids ever. Like, we're talking Olympic style kids here. These people are the ones winning the games of Westeros, if that's a thing. Like, all you Seven Kingdoms can suck it, because a wildling and this gigantor of a woman are going to produce some seriously tall bearded babies.
Though I've seen some people take a special guest star, we'll be getting to him soon, from this week's episode, and say that he is the result of those two getting together with Tormund's hair color and her wispy hair.
But, oh my god, yes.
I like to call Lady Brienne and Tormund the greatest love story on TV. So,
Gosh, yeah, that's so wonderful.
I 100% agree with you. It was nice that they got a scene. You and I brought up Cersei, so let's go ahead and get to her, because we then cut to King's Landing, where she calls herself the Queen of the Seven Kingdoms, but her brother quickly points out, you got three kingdoms at the
three
very
best.
Most.
He's immediately going, hey, let's tone that back a little bit.
Whoa. Let's calm down a little there, Chief.
But not even half.
It's like, I am super interested to see what crazy Queen Cersei is going to do, because this is the first time that we have seen her without, and I'm using this term very lightly, what anchored her down, her children.
Yes.
Like this is Cersei off the chain. And if I lived in this in this realm and the Lannisters were an enemy of mine, I'd be a little worried.
It's not good for anybody in her path. I feel like she's really, I mean, Cersei is an evil bitch.
Very much so. Yes.
She's, ever since
regularly.
Episode one.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since episode one.
Do you remember how episode one ended?
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
you know why Bran's legs don't work? Episode one.
That dude got to walk one time, and he is still here seven seasons later.
Yeah.
My God.
Let that
I'll give him an award for just not being able to stand up. He's always laying down every time. And now he didn't even have Hodor around. Rest in peace,
Hodor. Yeah. Maybe that's who we need to say is the year of our Lord, Hodor.
Yeah, the year of our Lord, Hodor. But yes, Cersei is just ruthless. If you thought she was bad before, now she has no reason to try and keep anyone that she even lightly dislikes in her company. She is going to remove them off that map. That's what she wants. And like, I don't know what she's going to do, but it's not going to be good. I think the scene in season six where she leaves that poor nun with the mountain, God knows what's going on there, but that's the kind of Cersei we've ended up with after shaming her, after her children being gone, the prophecy of that fortune teller that told her that when she was young, that coming true. We're dealing with a different animal here, because she is just wanting the worst, seemingly everybody, and Jaime is trying to be, we've got another sibling.
Relative voice of reason. And again, I use that term very lightly.
Oh, he's relative, don't you worry. It's something that, a sidebar, I love all the incest jokes that anybody ever hurls at the Lannisters in the series. It's the best dig, because they hate it. It's one thing that you can throw at them when you don't have any other ammo. Yep. It is wonderful. It would be my default ocean button to say to them if I got in verbal, conflict. But this is not going to be good, and Jaime has to be – he's got to keep her in line. Like, I know you're pissed, honey, but we can't do this. I can't fight all these people and expect our family to survive.
Well, and it does seem like Jaime does want to talk about this. Like he says he wants to talk about Tommen, which leads us, the viewers, to take away – they have yet to talk about their own son taking his own life. And when Cersei hears that, he betrayed us. Do you not understand that? He betrayed us. Like,
dude,
that's how far gone Cersei is gone into Queen Crazy Cersei.
Like, you killed his wife. You killed his in-laws. You killed
everybody.
The priest that he was taught. You killed all these people. Like, who betrayed who here, woman? What are you talking about?
And we're going to be dealing with a character, or really, let's call it what it is, an entity that will do anything to win. And we see that later in this scene when she, after Jamie tells her, yeah, you got three kingdoms at the absolute most, and she says enemies literally surrounding her, we need to make an ally, and who do we see pulling up into King's Landing? Euron Greyjoy and his fleet.
The Greyjoys. Yeah, that
because
was...
Because she needs a queen.
That's a
or
smart
he needs
play.
A queen. Yeah.
He needs a queen, yeah. It's an interesting play there. That's what I figured, because the only way that King's Landing isn't just absolutely decimated in whatever war is about to come their way, living or dead, doesn't matter, is they have to have some type of reinforcements. They have to have some type of reinforcements, because if he's saying they only got three kingdoms behind them, they don't really have a lot of friends, and even their own brother is coming and
on the other side. And,
yeah.
And Jamie said, it's like, we're going to have problems getting people to sign up, because people don't want to sign up for a losing fight, and right now, we, the Lannisters, are perceived as the losing side.
Yes, especially after he mentioned, so the news has already gotten back that the Freys are all, they're all gone. Dead, they're gone, and they don't know how. The other thing was, the smart thing that Arya did, she did not say, again, she's using that I am no one type deal. She didn't say this was Arya Stark, you tell them the Starks this. No, you just tell them the North remembers, and that's it. Like, that was wise. She did let them see her face. But again, with her powers now, that's a
she can
that's
literally take any face she wants,
which would be insane. Got a theory about that. My first theory for this season was, I think somehow Jaime is going to be the one that ends up killing Cersei. I think that he will be a king and a queen slayer, and he will do it because she is so vile, much in the way the Mad King was. She's going to do that. She's going to take that whole deal all the way to the city that she did to the Citadel, or the you know, high temple or whatever. She's going to take that everywhere. What's to stop her from doing that? That's exactly what he killed the Mad King for. Why wouldn't he do that there?
And you bringing up the Mad King, I said earlier Cersei was talking about taking on enemies literally surrounding her, surrounding them. That's not the first time Jaime has heard this talk. He made reference to the Mad King literally talking about taking on everybody around him. And Jaime, he has to, like, the deja vu bells have to be going off to Jaime.
Oh, God, yeah. He's seeing that. He saw that at the end of season 6 when he saw her sitting on the throne. You could tell he's looking at this like, this is not the person I left. And the last two times Jaime has come back, a child is dead. The last time he came back with the daughter from, I think it was not Marine, but Dorne.
Dorne, yeah.
Daughter was dead. Second time he comes back after dealing with the Blackfish, son's dead. And this is also crazy. While they were alive, Jamie avoided the father talk all day long, but now that they're dead, he's the one bringing it up to Cersei, saying, we haven't even talked about Tommen and how he's gone. Like, that's pretty wild that he's got a complete flip on that. And
I
think
that together, yeah.
It's very weird. I think that Brienne has kind of given him a little bit of insight. Their time together meant something, obviously, to... I don't know if it was a love story. I think that she probably has feelings for him, but I think he kind of learned something from her about not being a Lannister.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not being the asshole all the time.
Yeah, he definitely did pick up something from their relationship. Like I said, I don't think it's a, or like you said, excuse me, I don't think it's a romantic thing, but I do definitely think it's a mutual respect, and because you have to remember, they literally had each other's backs.
Against a bear one time.
Yeah, I mean, like Leonardo DiCaprio couldn't do that by himself. So,
not walking away like they did.
No. The big takeaway for me from this scene, and this is again something we're going to try and do on the regular, a question of the week. Euron Greyjoy. I'm trying not to call him Euron Greyjoy. Euron.
Want to call him?
Yeah, because, and we'll get to this. There's some people that really don't like him on the internet. Euron Greyjoy promised Cersei a quote precious gift. What do you think that is? Like that's the question of the week. I want you, the listener, to let us know on Twitter or wherever.
Absolutely.
We decide to put this out. Nerdnewscafe.com, I believe, will be posting it, so maybe put it in their fan page to listen to Nerd News Cafe as well. What do you think this precious gift is?
I don't know. I'm guessing that Euron knows what's coming, and he's awful cocky. Like, he knows the dragons are coming. Like, he's never faced a dragon. He's a seafaring robber and pillager. This is not a guy that can win these huge wars. He wins by force and by mass. So I'm thinking that he's awful cocky about, I'm going to bring you something back. Okay, here's a couple of problems with that, old Euron. The problem is going to be that, A, if you take your sweet time, you're going to come back to one hell of a bad force with dragons or one dead army taking over everything. So, you know, spit, spot, chop, chop there, big guy.
Time is of the essence, time. Yeah.
So I'm guessing he doesn't have to go that far to get it. But I would have to say that there's got to be something that he believes he's got that will force Cersei to go, I have to survive, I have to come with you. Like, whatever you're going to bring me, maybe he's got something to defeat a dragon. Maybe he's got something to you know, he's got to have some type of magic or some type of intangible thing that you can't just go out and weld or make or, you know, discover. It's got to be a big deal. So he's got to have something that he's awful cocky and not worried that three giant dragons are coming there to burn everything down. So what does he have? I'm guessing he's got something that can kill a dragon. Hail Mary the crap out of that and just throw that out there.
That's not a bad theory, because I mean, like you said, they are going to have to deal with three dragons. I mean, and you said he's never seen a dragon and doesn't know how to fight it. Hell, nobody's seen a dragon. Nobody knows how to fight a dragon.
No, so. We've not seen how anybody fights them. Nobody does. They just die.
Christy. Yeah, exactly. They just show up and boom, game over. GG, guys.
The worst words you can hear in the show are Dracarys. Yeah, it's you're like, done,
oh,
baby.
Oh no. It's like, oh well, look at that. My script doesn't go past this page. Sweet.
Oh, I saw Dracarys. Oh, that's it. Yep.
Oh, me too. Okay. All right. I'll go
catch y'all at the reunion show.
Exactly. See ya. Yeah. See you at the wrap. but I'm going to echo what you said. I don't think it's a thing that you can buy or make. I actually think he's going to somehow get Tyrion.
Ooh, that would be good.
Yeah, because in this big speech, he talks about how he and the Lannisters need to team up because they both have siblings or they both have family members that they want to murder.
They want to kill.
Why not? Hooray! Yay! You want to murder your brother? I want to murder my brother. Let's all murder everybody's murder.
So let's have a sleepover.
Which, by the way, that leads to the weirdest marriage proposal I've ever heard. So,
good God.
Whatever. But oh,
what a creeper.
See, well, and you mentioned creeper. Let's talk about this. Apparently the book readers of Game of Thrones despise the show version of Euron Greyjoy. Just so
they're
hate
saying,
it.
They're saying it doesn't line up with what they think they feel like they know of the character. Like, it's just not, not the book Euron, basically.
I've asked a few of them, and they can't give me a definitive reason why, and it's like, oh, okay, it's like, I kind of feel like that's the point. He's a skeezy douchebag Jack Sparrow wannabe. Like you're not supposed to like him, I don't think.
God, no.
No.
But, I mean, is he really nice in the book? I mean, what...
Yeah, he seems like kind of an asshole. I'm not going to lie.
Everything I've seen of him, I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty dick move. Yep, followed by dick move number two. Looks like we're straight on the way for this guy to be in a full-blown douche. Like, I think that's what he's aiming for. And, you know, maybe if there's a different plot line. I have heard that there are some characters that either haven't been introduced or died a different way or something like that. Like, I've heard a little bit of that, but I don't care. I like the show, so I'm letting the show determine, you know, those plot points for me. I can read up about it in Wikipedia after I've watched the episode. What was different between the episode and the book?
Yeah, it's like,
you can read those all day. I'll read that before I read the book.
Another thing we're going to try and do on this podcast is kind of like, I guess, for lack of a better term, fantasy book. You made reference to characters being in the book, not necessarily in the show. I might be touching on that later in my fantasy booking, so we'll get to that later. We call that a tease in the business.
Don't give them just enough to let them know it's there.
Exactly. So let us know what you think this priceless gift is, because next scene, this show goes right into the
gutter. Literally.
Literally. We are going to the Citadel and seeing Sam clean out bedpans with big old chunks of dookie in them. It was
gross. That's disgusting. Well... It's well done on the cinematographer because the producer or whoever made the decision to make the soup and the look exactly the same.
Yeah, God help you if you are eating dinner watching this episode of Game of Thrones, because I'm willing to bet dinner came to an abrupt halt during this scene.
I'm not proud to say that I was eating a little bit, and I did. I had to stop. I was like, yep, I'm going to need a minute before I can choke down more of this stuff. And the best thing was I could have had at least a half hour of all the takes of Sam going every time he gets – I don't know why it makes me funny. It makes me laugh, and I think it's so funny. But every time he did it, I chuckled. I was like, oh, please keep this up. Keep this montage going.
See, I was on the flip side. I was like, no, Moss, I don't want to see any more Game of Thrones Dookie. No, thank you.
Every time.
No, S-poo-poo.
I wanted him to get past that gate soon as he could. I didn't want him to keep doing this.
Well, it did show other stuff than poop.
Than hospice work.
Exactly, yeah. We get it, Game of Thrones. He's doing his jobs, literally and figuratively.
Ugh.
We do see Sam look almost lustfully at some books that are locked away that he doesn't have access to. Maesters only. He ain't a maester at this point.
Yep.
And then he's talking to an archmaester while dissecting a maester, by the way, because when you're in the Citadel, you do Citadel things, apparently.
We gotta learn.
Exactly. Might as well learn something from this, a drinker's liver, if you remember.
He ain't doing anything with it.
Exactly. Yeah. This is a heavy one. But Sam makes his plea to the archmaester. It's like, look, I understand I'm not a maester, but it's like winter is coming. I've seen the undead walk and attack. And the archmaester's like, okay, I do believe you in the way you talk, but we've literally been told the end is coming so many times. When the Mad King was on the prowl, when Hunter, help me out here.
Any time that they've had any kind of big threat, it's not that they don't believe the threats are real. It's just the threats have never made it to the Citadel. Mm-hmm. They've never gotten that far because that's, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that, and I don't have the map here, but isn't that a really, really far way south? Is it the southernmost point? It's like, I feel like the Iron Bank and the Citadel are in such remote locations, but I guess I could be wrong. I just haven't looked at the map, but something gives me the impression that they're able to really have that kind of confidence because they're just way far south, below all the other spaces.
I don't know where they lie on the map, but I do think they are like isolated, maybe similar to the Vale. It's very hard to access it.
Yes, they're protected by their own environment and surroundings enough to where they don't have to get that kind of fearful mentality when the threats show up. Plus, I would hope, and that's what Sam's trying to figure out, is, you know, we should have the knowledge to kill them, but whether or not we use that.
And it's like, I guess I can't fault him for that line of thinking. Yeah, the Citadel's seen like Apocalypse 1 through 5, and we got it on the box set now. But it's like... Pardon, like, y'all are academics. That kind of surprises me that they're like, yeah, okay, it'll figure itself out. Yeah, part of the world might die, but we'll be okay. That kind of took me by surprise.
I was surprised. Their kind of flippancy towards this threat that, you know, even if, especially if he believes the guy, I don't know. I think that the response should be of what Sam's trying to do. Like, maybe they look at him like you look at some kind of fanatic about, you know, a religious thing, or like everybody was going, you know, Mayan calendar, man, 2012, it's going down.
Yep.
Well, you know, maybe they look at them like that. Like, yeah, we've lived through the last 20 of these. We're going to be fine. Like, it's going to be okay. And I like that he finally gets past. Like, I didn't want him to see him shovel anymore.
Yeah, me too.
I wanted him to get – I was like, get behind the gate, son. Just climb it if you need to. Who gives a damn?
Literally anything other than the poop.
Oh. So he finally, you know, musters up the cojones to go get the keys, get in there, and he reveals the name of the episode, Dragonstone.
Which has some more significance we'll be getting to later.
Oh, yes. I mean, this is a big deal. He finds that there's a connection between the Dragonstone or the Dragonglass. There's a mountain of it. It's under Dragonstone.
Yes, it is.
And we can make weapons out of that. Jon Snow needs to know. So he's already sent the Raven to Winterfell that will let Jon Snow know where that supply is. Now, the question is will the undead get there first? That's going to become a big point of contention because you've got Daenerys there, you've got Jon Snow about to want to be there.
Yep.
So that could be your that could be the touch point of where finally you get a united front to sail into Westeros with Jon Snow, his crew, and then, you know, Daenerys. I don't know if that would work, but that would be crazy if they met up there and were able to unify to take down, because they both said, you know, at least Daenerys has said, I have to have a king. Bartering agreements, I can use marriage as one of those to get to the throne. I need to keep that option open. That's why she got rid of her handsome boy toy second actor, yeah. That boy toy, yeah.
Not Shawn Michaels, by the way. Not that boy toy.
No, not that boy toy. No. That's the original, the OG boy toy.
Exactly.
that's the cool thing. We finally learn he sends that off, and I'm glad. The Sam stuff, I'm not that interested in. I need him to find the information and move on, because he's got some type of I know he's already killed the White Walker, but he's got something, or at least he better have some great thing to do later on, because we keep cutting to him a lot when I care about other characters.
You're winning a big payoff, and you're afraid you're not going to get a big payoff with as much time as they spend to Sam. But at the same time, it's like, I don't necessarily disagree. To me, this and the Ed Sheeran scene, these were the weak points in this past week's episode. But I kind of feel like Sam has a purpose. He's kind of like the R&D to everybody out in the field. Like he's Q to Jon Snow's 007.
I got you.
He figured out, hey, I know how to kill the unkillable. And like you said, he's going to let Jon Snow know where it is. And I do think that's going to lead to us finally getting that moment where Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen share a screen.
Yeah, man, A Song of Fire and Ice. Let's get this going. The Snow and the Dragon Lady.
And I might actually be talking on that in my fantasy booking later. So it's fun you brought it up. And let's just go ahead and bring it up, the Ed Sheeran scene.
I already deleted his Twitter account because he apparently got the backlash.
Like, I hate that it went that far. It's like, internet, stop being asshole to Ed Sheeran. Like it's not his fault, but I'll admit, well, it's not his fault that you know, he got to be in the show, because let's admit, every single one of us listening would be in Game of Thrones in a heartbeat. But I'm willing to bet none of us are international pop stars.
Yeah, can I be like a White Walker or something, or do I have to be the lame dude that's just kind of humming a tune in the woods? He'll be the dude humming the tune in the woods. Damn it! When do I need to be there?
it's because I'm a musician, right? Yeah, pretty much.
Sure.
Okay, all right. And that's what it was. This scene opens with Ed Sheeran singing. Arya rides up on a horse. We see soldiers, a fire, with Ed Sheeran singing. She comes and sits with them. They ask, what's a girl like you doing out here in the woods by herself? Oh, I'm on my way to King's Landing. Well, why are you doing that, young lady? She pauses, takes a big old swig off of blackberry wine.
Good for her.
Absolutely.
Proud of her.
She is definitely of the drinking age. And also,
she's a Stark, baby.
She's seen some stuff, so she probably needs to take the edge off. She straight up tells a group of strangers, I'm going to kill the queen.
I'm going to kill the queen. And they just kind of look at her, and they think I feel like these are obviously Lannister soldiers.
Yeah, I was curious. It kept cutting to their armor, and I know I've seen that armor before. I just can't place what house I've seen that armor with.
It was enough, it was enough of the same gold armament that I've seen on a couple of other ones to just assume. If they weren't Lannisters, the show has kind of confused me, because I needed, direct. I feel like the soldiers laugh because they're like, that's absurd. You're a little girl. Ha ha ha. You're in the woods killing the king.
Yeah,
or the queen.
They laugh it off. They don't take it serious for whatever reason. But mentioning the colors, obviously beforehand, the Lannisters, they were red and gold. I don't know if you picked up in the scenes with Cersei and King's Landing, the guards, the queen's guards, were wearing different colors. They were wearing a black and silver, almost like Oakland Raiders look.
Yes.
Only Jaime was still wearing the traditional Lannister colors, which I thought was,
Yeah, you're giving me a little visual dissonance between these two, and it's also, you know, that can be seen as them holding their mourning publicly. That's their way, because it doesn't seem that Cersei's interest privately in mourning, because she told him when the body was pulled into the morgue, she said, you know, burn his body, throw him in the temple with the rest where he belongs or whatever. Like, she didn't even bury his body with the rest of the family. Like, she's dead inside
He betrayed us. She said that about her son killing himself.
Yes, because she blew up half the people he knows.
Yeah.
I mean,
fun family dynamic, the Lannisters.
She really knows how to bring it home with the love and the feels.
It's all about the family. And last thing on the Ed Sheeran thing, it's like, did it take you out of the scene on your first viewing? Because they make it very blatant. Ed Sheeran is in this scene.
Yeah, it does. I think it's hard not to, because it does. We were just talking about how many of these characters that we know by name immediately. No, we don't know every one of them.
Exactly.
I think even you're giving me a character that's either not going to make it to the end of the series, maybe even the episode, and you're trying to make it inconspicuous that it's somebody that I know. And I look, don't get me wrong, here's the cool thing. I'm wearing a Mastodon shirt. They're huge fans of Game of Thrones, and they were in the Hard Home episode.
Yeah, they were.
The guitar player, I think either the guitar player and the bass player, or both the guitar players were in the Hard Home episode where they raised everybody up. They were some of the dead bodies that got raised up, and they were in makeup and everything. So metal. I get wanting to be – oh, that's metal as hell. I get wanting to be on the show, and I think it's a good thing. If you can get on there, hell, I would. Mm-hmm. But – Don't try and, you know, I don't think they handled it poorly, but I think it was like, hey man, yeah, that's Ed Sheeran, I get it, or Ed Sheeran, or however you say his name.
Yeah.
I can't even say real people's names, much less the fictional ones.
Well, it's funny that you have a problem pronouncing his name, because like I referenced earlier, I have another podcast, Nerd News Cafe. On our Twitter, twitter.com/nerd_news_cafe, I put out a Twitter poll asking this question: what did you think of Ed Sheeran's cameo in last night's Game of Thrones premiere? I put this out on Monday, so the last night does still apply there. In third place, tied at 12%, was "it was cool" and "eh, it was okay." The winner is "took me out of the moment" at 41%, and in second place at 35%, who is Ed Sheeran?
So that's the real question. I'm not up on my current pop music. I don't really listen to that. He's probably pretty good. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably not my jam. I'm wearing a Mastodon shirt. You know.
Yeah, I mean, like,
established.
Very happy for his success, but I'm probably not going to throw on some Ed Sheeran when the fellas come over to play video games.
Let's put it this way: if he dies in the series, I feel nothing. It's not a sharp loss for me. It's okay. I'm okay with that, George.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we've talked way too much about Ed Sheeran, so let's move on. Speaking of characters that we can't pronounce, we have Captain Fiery Eye Patch Guy with the Brotherhood Without Borders and the Hound riding through the snow, and they come upon a cabin, which, if you've been paying attention and watching since the first season, this cabin might look a little bit familiar.
Yes, it took me a minute to put it together, but Game of Thrones will do something. They kind of do it like Walking Dead will do the same thing. Their preview for the show will give a little reference of like, hey, you want to remember that this episode, which I think is smart, because my mother, watching movies or TV shows with her, God bless her, I love her, but she's going to ask some questions.
Like, who's that?
And yeah, wait a minute. Now, why is he so forlorn about this whole... you know, thing we got going here, I don't understand.
Why is like, Luke Skywalker upset at his dad?
How come he don't have no hand?
I love your mom, by the way.
Yeah, come on. I'm not gonna badmouth her. But yeah, I think that even for me, this show has got a lot of threads, a lot of roots that go all over the place. I'm gonna need that. I needed that before the episode, because I would have forgotten too. I wouldn't have made the connection.
I'm right there with you. And like, I'll admit, it actually had to take me looking up. It's like, okay, clearly he remembers something about these courses. So I was a little bit lost. So, I mean, that goes to speak to HBO's, I guess, smart planning by putting, hey, psst, dumbass, pay attention to the previously on.
You remember this guy? This is going to mean something.
This is going to mean something. Look him up on Wikipedia real quick. You're going to need to know what's going on. But yeah, in season four, the Hound, when he was still touring with Arya, I like to say everybody's on tour in Westeros when they're
good.
Riding.
Most adorable tour ever.
Exactly, right, yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say that.
I kind of had an abrupt ending, but still. A Rocky ending, if you
Rocky,
will.
Rocky, hi-oh! It might stick out in your mind.
He fell off a cliff.
There was bone through the skin. It was disgusting.
In season four, the Hound robbed and left this father and his daughter dead. And guess what? Death came. Because that's
death
what death does in Westeros if you invite it. It shows up.
You get the sense that, you know, big guy's trying to atone. He knows he's got some some demons and some stuff. So him just, I didn't think that with this whole band of merry, you know, Robin Hood like brothers, mm-hmm. I didn't expect this to happen for him because he's always a loner. But either A, he knows he doesn't need to be a loner to do whatever it is he wants to do, and B, if the dead are coming, or if now that he sees that, he's going to need more than himself. He's got to depend on other people. So that feels like that'll be an interesting arc, and I don't care if it's in the book or not. Can we get Clegane Bowl? Can we make this happen?
I
want the Mountain versus the Hound so bad I can't stand it.
See, you made reference to what he's seen by seeing the dead coming. He looked in the fire after calling the Lord of Light, just a bunch of talk, and he saw in the flame an army of the dead marching on the wall. And like we talked about earlier, that one castle where the wall meets the sea that we think is going to end up playing a big role in this upcoming season. He sees that, and I kind of think it's like he's starting to believe, and this is kind of a redemption tour for him, and for a lack of a better term. I mean, he goes and buries these bodies, and he tries to say a prayer, and he straight up admits, he's like, I don't know the fucking rest. It's like, you shouldn't be dead.
This is, he understands, you know, he's gotten to see more of the results of his actions, I guess, because he's left King's Landing, all that. He had Arya with him for a while, left that, had this life that he was trying to do with the hippies, couldn't have that. He's kind of seeing, you know, there are actions that, you know, have long consequences, and this kind of helps. But it does feel like it, and it also feels very odd to have the Hound. The Hound was a good one to have a vision because he is not one of these fanatics.
He's a non-believer.
He doesn't believe in your bullshit. He doesn't care. And then when he's saying it, you're like, oh, no. Now there's more to these crazy assholes than we knew. They can be used for good. Like, I have a different view of Melisandre than I do of these guys, and they both serve the Lord of Light. So it's an interesting dynamic. Like, they're not all the same, even within that religion, because there are all kinds of religions that other people, the old gods and the new ones, the, you know, seven gods or whatever. The Lord of Light thing, you see kind of a difference between Melisandre being, you know, just questionably vicious with the way that she handles it, or more of kind of a beggar helper type religious thing, but not to the point like the High Sparrow. So you get this different dynamic. I keep forgetting almost that Melisandre and these guys are on the same team, per se, because they don't resemble one another.
And I'll echo what you said, by having a non-believer in the Hound see that vision, that does let you know, it's like, oh, wow, okay, this Lord of Light guy, he might still have a say in the way this story plays out, but you talking about wanting to have Big Fatty versus Big Fatty, boom, like Mountain versus the Hound.
I think
we're going to get that, because in that vision the Hound had, you remember the point where he says a mountain shaped like an arrowhead? Did you notice the new helmet that the Mountain was wearing in King's Landing? A lot of people on the internet said it kind of had an arrowhead type look to it. So
I like that theory. I hope that's the truth, but I feel like it's a little bit of reach. I feel like
it's absolutely a reach. This is fan theories on the internet.
But I mean, I get where they're coming from, but I feel like the Mountain he's talking about that looks like an arrowhead, I think that's the Dragon Glass. I think Dragonstone, the name of the episode, is coming back again to really hammer home that this place is important. It's trying to basically, I guess, let us know that if you didn't think it was important before, it becomes a new sort of, you know, you're seeing it with new eyes. You have a different ruler there. It's the same board. It's the same, you know, seas. It's all that stuff. But you have a different, you know, take on this. It's sort of, if there's a good in Game of Thrones, if there's a good, you know, queen or king, how would this place be different? So I like that. I like that Dragonstone gets to actually become important, because there are some locations we visited once, we haven't visited, and we may never do that again. And so they kind of get sloughed aside, and I felt like Dragonstone was definitely with us.
You keep bringing up Dragonstone. Let's go ahead and head right there as Daenerys Targaryen and company do in our next scene. And I love the way this scene is shot. Only one line of dialogue is said at the very end. They let the actor's body language, they let the gorgeous sets built, and the actual island itself tell the entire story, like, of Daenerys' homecoming and the power and emotions that she's feeling. I thought it was a very, very well shot scene and sequence.
I agree completely. I felt like it was the ultimate use of a picture is worth a thousand words. I don't need you to describe the shores. I don't need you to tell me about all the dragonglass. I just want to see people come home. Like, what does that look like for them? And what do you feel? You know, these gigantic dragon busts that are out in the palace. Like, those are cool. It's just, that's her coming home to Winterfell. Like, we've seen a lot of people that get to come home again. I'm curious to see, you know, how that's going to play out. And if we're going to have some, I mean, a lot of people are now focusing on Dragonstone. Thankfully, it's a lot of people in one quote-unquote side. If I'm going to pick sides between, you know, the jackasses, the cool people, and the dead. That's the three categories.
Exactly, yeah. Uh-huh. Probably not going to side with the dead people. So, and it's interesting you do point out, we don't know where party lines have been drawn. I mean, we're all theorizing that Daenerys and Jon are going to be all buddy-buddy and figure out it's cool between us. I mean, for all we know, we might never get along.
Yeah. Maybe that's a terrible matchup. She's relying on dragons all the time, and he's so, you know, foot soldier on the ground. Maybe he can't account for that. I don't know. It just, the two of them seem very, very much so on the same path.
Mm-hmm. I agree with
you. But John doesn't necessarily want to be king. I think that's the different distinction between them. Daenerys is very clearly wanting the throne because she believes she can make the world a better place, whereas Jon is not seeking that at all. Jon has not sought the commandership of being a lord there at the Wall. He's not been looking for being a king of the North. He's a bastard, so he thinks. And so he's not expecting his lot in life to just grow by leaps and bounds. And he's one of the only characters that's content with that, or, you know, can make peace with that. Everybody else has got to have more or change their situation completely.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's like Jon Snow really feels like the only character playing the Game of Thrones that didn't outright try to play the Game of Thrones. Everything, every piece of leadership, everything that's happened to him has been thrust upon him, even being entered into the Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and it feels like he's just reacting. And that's why one of my favorite scenes in Game of Thrones is in the Battle of the Bastards, when he's out there by himself and he has this kind of like morose look. And yeah, you could say that's the look of a guy that's going to die. He knows he's going to die. But it's got to be even a little bit crazier than that, because he's like, not only am I know I'm going to die, but I'm going to have to come back and do this again.
Like, he went and said to Melisandre, "Do not bring me back. I am signing a magic do not resuscitate form here." And Melisandre's like, "Yeah, that's not how this works. This is out of my hands."
Yeah, she's truly giving up the idea that she gives any power. She's more of a conduit. And so it just felt like, man, I've done this before. I've been killed. And now if I die on the field, this isn't it. I have to see this again and again. I'm forced, because if I win this battle, then I have to take Winterfell and now focus on the Lannisters or some other enemy
that
comes
along.
Or the dead. Like, it's a never – and even if you get killed by the dead, you're not dead.
Yeah.
You come back. He's like – he kind of gets this long-term view of this sort of despair of like, damn, I'm never really going to be – able to check out like all these other people that have checked out. Like, I have to sit here and deal with this time and again, even if I lose, which is terrible. So I feel like that's kind of his view on it. He's like, man, the dead are coming. These crowns, I don't care for any of that. This throne ain't even going to be here. You guys are on the wrong issues.
Well, I mean, you said earlier, it's like death doesn't care what your face looks like. Death doesn't care about your title either. It doesn't care how many kingdoms are under your reign. Death is coming for you, and that brings us to the end of this episode. Oh, by the way, the one line of dialogue that was said during the final scene was, "Shall we begin?"
And then "Shall we begin?"
Boom, roll credits. So,
hey, before you kill the episode, I want to do just a couple of just in-game theories, some kind of quick, you know, cliff note in-game theories of what you think is going to be the total in-game, or what you would kind of like to see. It doesn't have to be, you know, your own theory, but well, what have you heard, or what do you think you want to be the end game for some character or some arc or some piece of the story?
Do you want to go into our fantasy booking fan theory thing that we were teasing earlier?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I didn't know that.
All right. Well, before we get to that, I wanted to get your thoughts on this episode as a whole.
This episode, I thought, set up everything pretty well. That's what you're going to get out of it. I don't think anybody expected this to be a large battle scene. They've given us the last three episodes of season 6 that were spectacular. They were paced well.
They were shot incredibly well. The Battle of the Bastards just needs to be seen. It's one of those awesome, you know, kind of chaotic battle scenes, and suffocating scene in there too. They've done so much big. It's like if you're Metallica, you got to write Fade to Black too. you got to write something that's, you can't just write the heavy shit. You got to write, it's going to be able to ramp up to something. And I think this is a good spot to do it, especially because we don't have a lot of episodes. I think that's going to weigh even heavier. Like, hey, I want, you know, as much bang for my buck as I can get on these things. But yeah, this set up a lot. I liked it. And I think it's going to be an interesting season.
Well, I like to hear you say that, because I've seen a lot of people online complain and say, this was a boring episode and they didn't like it. It's like, yeah, it doesn't have the big giant action pieces we've had in the last three episodes. But at the same time, I feel like this episode set the platform, set the tape perfectly for our final 12 episodes going forward.
Yeah.
Not only did it start with the Red Wedding reception, what a way to start the season.
Ooh, great way to start the season.
It set in motion Crazy Queen Cersei, and it introduced several plot points that we both theorize and both think that are going to play out very heavily, if not the final 12 episodes, at least this season. So I liked this episode, and I don't understand the hate that it was getting online, but you teased it earlier. Let's go ahead and get into in-game fantasy booking fan theories, or whatever the fuck we decide to call this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm down. I have a couple that I've heard. They're not my original ones,
okay,
but I do like them, and so I want to respect and let everybody know this is not mine. My buddy Chris Rimbolt has brought up a couple of these options, and so he said one of them was that I liked. He said, what if George R. R. Martin is killing all of the main characters in order that he loves them so they die first to all the way to the end, to where the last one that dies is the one he hates the most? In other words, what if he loved Ned and didn't want him to have this terrible war with the dead, so he kills him first?
He removed him so he wouldn't suffer what's coming next.
Yes, and as you go down the line, it goes, and so what if, and he surmised, he says, so what if the dead make it all the way to Westeros, and the last one left is Cersei, and so she has to see everybody that she's loved died, and everybody else, and he kills her last. Like, what if that's, if he, like, hates her or something? I don't think that's really something that's going to happen, but I liked the idea behind that theory.
Yeah, just the mental image of Cersei having to see literally everybody that she fucked in this life look her in the face.
Is the eyes terrible?
All right, well, like, well, this is how I go. All of my past transgressions coming to get me.
I like that theory.
That's fun.
Do you have any in-game theories?
I have an in-game idea for season 6 and or season 7. I already know how season 6 ends. I got that.
Yeah.
but season 7, and it was on a lot of stuff that we talked about in this episode, the way it introduced some plot lines. And I'm gonna throw a bone to the book readers here, because I am aware of the character Lady Stoneheart. Are you familiar with her?
I am familiar with this. This is the reincarnation somehow of Catelyn Stark.
Yes, it is zombified Cat Stark. So
yes.
I think the show producers have made it very clear they're probably not going down that route, and that's upset a lot of book readers. So I'm gonna take that idea and roll it into season 7. Okay, so we know the White Walkers are coming. They show up at the wall, knock down the wall, go right through it. The Night's Watch, they abandon the wall where they come through it, and they retreat to Winterfell. They tell Jon they broke through. They're coming for Winterfell. They know where we are. So
yeah.
Jon's preparing Winterfell. The White Walkers show up there. Jon and company, everybody at Winterfell, puts up a good fight, but the White Walkers take Winterfell. The King of the North has to secede Winterfell to the White Walkers to save his people. They don't suffer any major casualties of any major name characters or it's Game of Thrones. I'm sure like every one of your character dies in this scene.
Yeah.
And your dog growing up. So
poor Winterfell.
So before, not literally before the White Walkers show up, we talked about how Sam got a raven out to Jon this episode that Dragonstone is literally sitting on a mine of dragonglass.
Yes.
So Jon knows this piece of information, and he knows Dragonglass can kill the White Walkers. So he and Winterfell are going to head to Dragonstone.
Okay.
So that is how we're going to end up seeing Jon and his crew meet up with Daenerys and their crew, and they're going to form an uneasy alliance because Tyrion and Varys will be like, yes, we need all the help we can get, and the North can give us fighters and stuff like that. So there's going to be an uneasy alliance, but there's still not a whole 100% on each other's side.
And that's how you think this season will end, is by Jon Snow and Daenerys?
Oh, no. Okay. I'm not there yet.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's ramping up. So White Walkers, who are undefeated at this point, they've already taken out the Wall. They've already beaten Winterfell. They decide to march on King's Landing. They show up to King's Landing, and they wipe the floor with them. Like hot knife through butter. Just destroy them. Kill everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe Jaime escapes. I don't know. But Cersei dies. They kill Cersei.
Yeah, I want to see that.
And she is reincarnated as Lady Iceheart. Or the Night Queen.
Oh, so that'd be interesting.
Vengeful, or Crazy Queen Cersei is now Vengeful Crazy Queen Zombie Cersei.
Woo, that's a lot of terrible adjectives.
Yes, I know. It gets worse. At this point, the White Walkers, they know where Daenerys Targaryen is. They know where Jon Snow are. So they're going to try, or they're going to get to Dragonstone somehow. The White Walkers are repelled at that point. The combined forces of Winterfell and Dragonstone are able to repel them, but they take heavy casualties, including one of Daenerys' dragons. One of the dragons dies. So... Ooh.
Not big boy, probably one of the small ones.
Yeah, one of the small ones. So cut to after everybody's like licking their wounds, wondering what they can do next because they just gave it their best shot, and the White Walkers, even though they lost that fight, they haven't lost the war. So cut to the dead body of the dragon. Night King walks up.
Oh no!
Touches the dragon.
I see where you're going.
The dragon starts to move. Two words. Three syllables, Ice Dragon.
Damn.
Season ends.
That would be cool. I would love to see an Ice Dragon. That's one of the things I want Game of Thrones to do now.
They've given us zombie giants. I mean, they've upped the ante, so they owe us Ice Dragons at this point.
They owe us Ice Dragons. You're damn right they do. Right. I want an Ice Dragon Game of Thrones. Hook a brother up. is that how the end of Season 7 is?
Yes, that is end of Season 7. You see the Ice Dragon start to move again, fly right at the screen, roll credits.
Yeah, I think that's a hell of a last episode for the season. I wouldn't be disappointed if that happened. I will tell you that.
I mean, I would have to pat myself on the back, but I'd be a little aggravated at myself, be like, damn it, Landon, you ruined it.
You knew it. Maybe I'm psychic.
And at that point, I'd be like, I am going to buy every lottery ticket. That way I can't lose.
That would
buy
be
them
awesome.
All, you can't lose.
That's what they say. I have another in-game theory that was given to me by a buddy.
Lay it on
me. I like it so much. He said that what if Game of Thrones is George R. R. Martin's apocalypse story? Like, the ending lesson is it doesn't matter what you do, you can't outrun death. And what if the Night King is the last one, is the one that sits on the throne in the final scene? What if the last scene is him sitting down on the throne and it going to ice? Like, that would be an apocalypse tale of, doesn't matter, death comes for us all, that's just what happens. That's real. Because he's so realistic, he's so visceral with his characters already when they're in the land of the living. What if his point is always to be, look, death comes for us, and that sucks, but it happens, and that's what the final scene is the Night King on the throne.
That would be kind of, I know a lot of people would be upset at that because they want some epic, you know, three dragon tear apart of the Ice King with Jon riding in on a warg or something.
Yeah, we've gone this far and they're all going to die? What? You know?
That would be one of those moments where it's like once it hits you and you realize...
I mean,
I'm not gonna lie, a little part of me would probably be pissed off, but at the same time it's one of those like thinker endings.
It's probably not something that they would lean hard. I just thought it was as hell, so I was like, yeah.
That is kind of brutal, man. Yeah.
Whoa, metal. I don't have any theories as far as like story arcs and, you know, where people end up. I think it, you know, if you want the happy ending, you're going to get Daenerys and Jon Snow on the throne. Mm-hmm. But that seems way too happy for Game of Thrones. I feel like one of them won't make it. Mm-hmm. I think that's the...
I don't know how happy of an ending it would be, because this will be another future theory we get into. There is theory online, I did not come up with this, that they're kind of related. But as Game of Thrones has shown, incest really isn't that big a deal in Westeros.
Oh, God, no.
I mean, it's frowned upon, but is it
really? Come on. Did you see this chick? She's abroad. Nobody's frowning that much on it. I mean, even if people snicker at it and know it,
exactly.
You're still queen. You're still king.
Yeah. What? You still rule. So, But yeah, it sounds like I'm a fantasy ideas, and as are you. So you want to go ahead and wrap this son of a bitch up?
Let's do it, brother.
All right. One more time, Hunter. Where can the lovely listeners find you on the World Wide Web?
I am on Twitter. I am at The Tall Effect. Truth be told, I've really not been that active on Twitter for quite some time. You can catch me on Instagram in the same, at The Tall Effect. I put out some fun stuff on music and guitars and beer and, your normal good stuff. So, yeah, catch me there and obviously on Facebook.
All right, good deal. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/Landoz, LANDOZ. I did make reference. I am one of the co-hosts of the Nerd News Cafe. We have episodes that drop every Tuesday and Thursday. You can find it at nerdnewscafe.com. You can find us on Twitter, nerd_news_cafe. And you can also find us in your Apple and Google Play stores, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever the hell you get your podcast. You can download it there. And hey, I'm willing to bet that might be the exact same place you got this fine podcast. So for Hunter East, I am Landon Doan, thanking you for joining us on the very first edition of Game of Thrones Talk, or Got Talk.
Got Talk.
Got Talk. Everybody have a good night. I think it's great that he's just straight up transitioned into being the dude in real life.
He's become the dude.
Yeah, he's like, dude, if I could, I would. I mean, I strive to do that.
It's everybody's goal.
I know. I just want to do one really good thing, get rich, and live the payout of that so I can move to California, buy a sweet-ass rug, and drink White Russians. I mean, what's wrong with that? Maybe fight the occasional marmot, but I see zero drawbacks in this plan.
Hold on. Nihilist, man.
That rug really did tie the room together.
Did it not?
Hold on.